Good evening. Allow me to begin this evening by expressing to you my deepest and most heartfelt appreciation. You have been an uplifting and benefit to me this entire time. I didn't realize how tired I was until I came here. And all of the words of encouragement and all of the words of appreciation and all the many things that you said has lifted me up, and I want to tell you thank you. I have enjoyed thoroughly being able to be with you this week, and I have had many of you come and speak and talk with me and ask me questions and listen to me ramble, and I am wanting to express to you that I love you and I appreciate you very dearly. And I appreciate all of the things that you have said and all of the hospitality that I have experienced that you have given in my time here. Thank you. I really and truly appreciate you. And tonight we stand on the brink of our final discussion, handling a topic that was brought to our attention on Sunday. The title of the lesson is entitled, Good Grief. Not about your house, but around my house, pretty common expression. It was quite regularly that my family would be heard saying, Good Grief! On a number of different occasions. And I remember them talking about that and using that particular phrase. Well, tonight, I use that particular phrase, not an expression of something that has gone wrong, but a statement that there is such a thing as good grief. As you and I have discussed on a number of occasions throughout this particular discussion, it has come to our attention on a number of occasions in which, whether it be by the design of Satan himself, humanity itself, or our stubbornness and pride, we have for many centuries have devoted our life to avoiding emotions. We have found ways of being able to keep from feeling. As we talked about on Sunday morning for Bible class, we have identified a list of bad emotions, emotions that Christians should not have, should never deal with, that are just wrong, only to find out there's no such thing as a bad emotion. We learned on Monday, in which we have for centuries yet again found ways to use addiction as a way to create that gap and that space from a difficult part in our life. Last night, as we talked about the subject of trauma, we experienced yet again man's desire to avoid feeling. Tonight, I think we come to the same problem. We come to the same difficulty, rearing its head in a different difficulty, in a different arena. Because this time, we are finding ourselves avoiding loss, avoiding the separation of a relationship, avoiding grief. If you were to define the subject of grief, if you were to define the word, you would find definitions such as the emotions connected to no longer having something. My mic keeps cutting out. I'm not sure if it's my fault or what. Maybe I blew it out already and I've tore it up. I'm good at tearing stuff up. We'll keep trying, and if I don't, I'll have to get stuck behind that thing. We'll try it. Others would define grief as the experience that one has whenever something is taken away. And on the list, perhaps, may go. You and I in our life have experienced grief, experienced loss. We have experienced no longer having something that we wish we had. Whether it be through the passing of a loved one, whether it be through the moving away of a relationship, whether it be the ending of a relationship, whether it be of losing a job, changing jobs, changing people in your life, kids moving away, kids moving back in. We have these feelings, and we have grief. And we are told, don't let it bother you. Don't feel. Just suck it up. Go on about life. And I'm here to tell you that, in my Missouri accent, that ain't healthy. I remember presenting this particular lesson not long ago in a place called Anderson, Missouri. And I got done presenting the lesson, and as we had finished and I had quit, I had got done, and as the traditional, you know, shake the preacher as you go out type thing, a gentleman came and he grabbed a hold of my hand and he wouldn't let go. And he just held my hand, and I thought, okay, what's going on? And he held my hand and he says, you know what? He said, I lost my wife a year ago. And he said, and I would not allow myself to hurt. And he said, it's time for me to be okay with hurting so that I can move on. So tonight I present this lesson to you as a way to help you realize some things that you've already known. Somebody talked to me yesterday and they said, you know what? Your lessons are just kind of common sense. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Where in the world has that gone? Well, how have we lost our common sense? We tell our boys, don't cry. We tell our girls, just cry, 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 because you're a girl. We tell our boys, rub a little dirt in it, get up. We try for centuries to keep ourselves from feeling. So tonight I want us to think about the idea of grief. These real brilliant people one time thought they would come up with this cycle of grief. And so they came up with this real cool chart. You know, it's cool. And it was real cool. Because you could sit there and you say, okay, somebody loses somebody. Okay, first thing they do is they're going to do this. And the next thing they're going to do is this. And then they do this, and then they do this, and then it's over. And that's, yeah, they look good. And they put it in a nice little flow chart. You know, real pretty. And then they took it to people. And you know what they found out? Oh, what a bunch of baloney. Because they began to realize that their nice little flow chart that, you know, starts here and goes around and woohoo. It, really, people kind of do this and then they do this and then they this and then this and then this and then this and this and that. And ooh, over here. Because when it comes to grief, no one does it the same way. When it comes to loss, when it comes to losing someone, no one does it the same way. So we cannot create this one size fits all, everybody does it this way, you start here and you end here. It doesn't exist. And anyone that claims to you that this is exactly, you do this, then this, they've lost it. They've lost it. Because the truth is that we are all different. We all handle grief differently. Are there different feelings that are common? Yes, there is zero doubt about that. But does every single person go through the exact same stages at the exact same period of time? Oh, my word, no. But instead, we all grieve our own ways. But the problem is that many of us call it my own way and don't grieve at all. So what gets in the way? Sometimes grief is complicated because of things that happened to create the loss. There are times in which the loss is created in such a way that it causes great hurt, great difficulty, great pains, and thus it begins to get complicated. I think often of David. As David is recorded there in 2 Samuel chapter 12, as his child with Bathsheba clings to life and ultimately dies, that is a difficult process. Because David knows this problem is occurring because he sinned. He made a mistake, and the consequences of that decision are now being felt throughout his family. He knew he made the mistake. Thus, it complicates the situation. We oftentimes think about the age of the person that passes if we're talking about death. We oftentimes think about whether or not it was early or late, or how they have or have not been able to live, what they've missed, what they've lived through, complicates the situation. Believe it or not, as you know quite well, the one's relationship with God tends to have a huge impact on the process of grief and loss. To one that does not believe in God, there is this huge issue. Because again, remember, if there's no God, then you're like Rover and you're just dead all over. And there ain't nothing else going on. To me, I can't think of anything sadder than that. With God in your life, you believe that there is a reward for the faithful. You know that when this life is over, better things will come to those that stand on God's Word. But yet the complication comes then when one who's not right with God passes from this life. So tonight I want to consider a couple of things. Number one, I want to deal with how do I go through grief. So the first thing, I want you to turn to John chapter 11. John chapter 11, we here record the events that surrounding Lazarus' passing. In John chapter 11, you have a Lazarus passing away. The knowledge of this was pre-discussed before he passed away to Jesus. Jesus tarried and kind of waited around. Ultimately, Lazarus passed away. Now Jesus is passing through and headed towards the town in which he has passed. He's arrived only to find that Lazarus has been passed for 4 days, to find Mary and Martha in great deal of sadness and grief, to see the mourners, to see those who were all upset due to the things that were occurring and the events that were taking place. Jesus arrives. He arrives and begins having a conversation with the sisters. They talk back and forth, beginning then, verse number 32. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw Him, she fell at His feet and she said to Him, "Lord, if You had been here, my brother would not have died." And Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping. He was deeply moved in His spirit and greatly troubled. And He said, "Where have You laid Him?" And they said to Him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. And so the Jews said, See how He loved Him. But some of them said, "Could not He had opened the eyes of the blind? Also, what kept this man from dying?" I often think about this passage when it comes to grief and loss. As you have studied, I have zero doubt that you have considered the fact that Jesus, being an all-knowing deity, He knew what He was about to do. He knew He was about to raise this man from the dead. He knew this man in a few moments was going to hear His name, be called from the tomb, walk out amongst everyone. He knew what was about to occur. And yet, Jesus wept. Jesus cried. The text seems to indicate that His tears did not come at the knowledge of Lazarus being gone. The tears did not come at finding that Lazarus had been gone for 4 days. The tears did not come with a discussion with Martha. The tears came after hearing the words of Mary. After seeing all of this issues and all this grief, Jesus wept. What have we been saying almost every single lesson since Sunday? Point one, it's okay to feel. Jesus felt. He felt not only His own relationship having that separation. He felt not only the difficulties that He had, knowing that Lazarus died and the pain that went therein. But He wept seeing these sisters cry. You and I have got to get a grip on some things. You and I have got to get a grip on how we view things. If Christians aren't allowed to feel, how can we call ourselves Christians? Jesus is described as our perfect example. Jesus is described as being the being that we are to follow and mimic throughout our entire life. Jesus is the one that you and I are to step and walk in those footsteps each and every day of our life. Jesus felt. Jesus hurt. Jesus cried. Jesus was emotional. And I submit to you, on that Garden of Gethsemane, as He laid in that ground praying to His Father in heaven, Jesus was an emotional wreck. And if Jesus can feel, so can I. We have to allow ourselves to feel. We have to allow ourselves to embrace the emotions of life, to be that complete person. Because not only am I going to have to allow myself to feel, the second thing is I've got to process through those feelings. Look for a moment, if you would, at Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13, beginning with verse... This one's cutting out again. We even got new batteries, too. Try this one. Sweet. Wardrobe change. Nah, just kidding. Whoever's hearing this on the tape recording from now on is going to no telling what just happened. For those of you who are listening right now on the radio or on the recording, I just switched mics. Nothing else is going on. Luke chapter 13, beginning with verse number 31, consider Jesus again. At the very hour, some Pharisees came and said to him, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." And he said to them, "Go and tell that fox, behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow. And the third day I finish my course. Nevertheless, I must go on my way today and tomorrow and the days following. For it cannot be that a prophet should perish away from Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered my children together as a hen gathered her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. Behold, your house is forsaken, and I tell you, you will not see me until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" I am also reminded of Jeremiah. And you have the gentleman described as a weeping prophet writing an entire book simply called Lamentations. The book of Lamentations is exactly that. It is the mourning. It is the writings of a man who saw what was and lived through what is. It is a book of a man who realizes the separation that has now been caused because of the sinfulness of man and the fact that he knew if they would have but listened, things would have been different. Jesus standing before Jerusalem, seeing them, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, if only you would have listened." One of the things that we use quite often at the ranch in order to process our feelings is that of journaling. Many of you in this room, I have zero doubt, have at your house a book, a notepad, paper that you write in on a regular basis, allowing your feelings, your emotions, your thoughts to drift from your mind through your hand into a piece of paper. Allowing those words to hold their place in paper, being removed from the mind. You think about Jeremiah, isn't that the book of Lamentations? Isn't that the journaling process of the prophet of God? Isn't that a great example of how you and I take those emotions, those feelings, those issues that are found therein, allow them to escape from our worries and concern, to find themselves on paper? As you and I think about the grieving process, we have got to allow ourselves to feel. We've got to allow ourselves to move through those emotions. I remember speaking with a lady when I lived in Cassville. Her husband had died at a tragic farming accident. And she came and saw me, and she and I sat and talked for a number of days throughout a number of weeks. And I remember she came in, and of course, as you can imagine, her concern, her feelings, that if only I'd have done this, or if only that. And I remember about the second or third time I talked with her, I said, "Now, with what you're saying and the things that you're presenting here, chances are you're going to get pretty angry with him." "Oh, no, it wasn't his fault. It was an accident," she said. I said, "Okay, just saying. Next session, guess what happened? She was madder than a wet hen, boy. She walked in. There was steam rolling out of her ears. She was just mad. And I said, you know, I mentioned her name. And How are you?
Oh, I'll tell you how I am. That dirty, rotten son of a gun. I'm like, woo, boy. She said, and this is just wrong. And I said, what makes this wrong? Well, I shouldn't feel like this. I said, but you do. You do feel like this. She said, am I wrong? And I said, ma'am, you're going through grief. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be mad. She said, but why do you do that? I said, well, what's the answer to that? She began to talk and she began to discuss things. And a little while later, sure enough, guess what? God comes into the picture. Before you know it, she goes from being mad at him to now she's just mad at God. God's fault that this happened. And you know what? Good preacher said, shame on you, lady. You should never, ever shame on. Shame, shame, shame. Don't ever bring God into this. No, no. Of course I didn't do that. You crazy. I said, okay. Because the reality is that oftentimes we aren't allowing ourselves to move through. And as we move through, we're going to draw some wrong conclusions. Isn't that exactly what happened with Job? Did Job draw any wrong conclusions in his process of grief? Remember, Job had all of these items. He had all these children. He lost 10 children in a matter of seconds. He physically, emotionally lost his wife a few seconds later. And in the process of his grief, what did he do? He went to God and said, God, put me on trial. God, come put me on trial. Come, you just come on down here, God. Tell me what I did that was wrong. Come on down here. He was picking a fight with God. Can you? What are you thinking, Job, man? Come on. But yet, what was the conclusion that Job came to? I absolutely adore those two chapters in which God says, okay, it's your turn to listen. For two chapters, you and I know the story. You and I know the recording that is presented therein. For two chapters, God says, okay, you think you know so much? Here, try this one on. Here, you try this one. Okay, you got that one? Here, try this one. Oh, that ain't good enough. Here, try this one. Oh, let me get you a couple more. God, in response, said, now, you've had your time. Now it's time to move on. The response of Job is recorded therein, in his repentance, his recognition that he needed to step back, was him processing his feelings. So when I'm going through grief, number one, allow myself to feel. Number two, process those feelings. Number three, honor the person or thing that is gone. Honor what is lost. Anybody John Wayne movie fans? One. Okay, you and me, buddy. Anybody like John Wayne movies? All right. Sons of Katie Elder. Anybody? Love that one. Love Sons of Katie Elder. I remember that movie. One of the first two movies I ever watched of John Wayne. Sons of Katie Elder. Loved that movie. You remember when the brothers, when they had the funeral and they came back the second time to the house? And it's right before the gentleman rides up in the buggy, you know, right before the big fight. I loved the fight. That was great. Right before the big fight. You remember what they were sitting there talking about? Four of them were standing there in the living room. They said, what are we going to do? And one of them said, well, we need to
We need to get Mom a monument. You remember that? The youngest brother says, yeah, this one guy got him a monument, an angel with her finger pointing at him. Somebody shot her finger off. It was like she's shaking her fist at everybody. He says, that's what we need to do. We need to get her a monument. John Wayne says, we ain't building her a monument. That isn't what she wants, some stone. She wants one of us to become something. That's the monument that she deserves. Oftentimes, when you and I have grief and loss, we forget to continue to live and honor the one that's gone. One of the boys at the ranch we have what's called TOMS, Targeted Objective Measures, behaviors that we would rather them have than the ones that they've been having. And one of his replacement behaviors simply says this: I will act in the cottage in a way that honors my mother. His mom passed away, died due to her drug use. His mother did all sorts of horrible things, not only in life, but to him. His replacement behavior: I will do what honors my mother. Do you know who came up with that goal? He did. And you know what he said when he came up with that goal? He said, my mom would want me to be better than she was. And in order for me to honor her, I need to be a better person than she was. Thus, we do things in life to honor that person. We do things in life to help show that we care, we appreciate, we love that person. So we show that honor, we show that appreciation, we live according to the principles that they would have wanted us to follow, or the principles that they have taught us to live. By honoring who they are and honoring what they have asked, we present that to everyone else. James and I went and got some ice cream yesterday, and I ate ice cream, he ate a hamburger. Carol ate chicken fingers, chicken strips. They don't have nuggets anymore at Brahms. Remember talking to him yesterday, and I have often talked with my dad about a gentleman by the name of Nathaniel Edwards Honeycutt, also known as N.E., also known as Than, I'm told. This particular gentleman was a preacher. He is also described as a jack of all trades and a master of none. This particular gentleman died a couple years before my parents were born. He was my grandfather. And I remember preaching a number of times with Grandma Opal, his wife. She would be in the audience, and something she would say on a number of occasions after it was over, and she would say, you know, your grandfather would have been honored to hear that. You know, we sometimes think about that when a person is passed, that there's no longer a connection, and that's incorrect. You are the connection. You are the connection the world now continues to have in that person. Your memories, your life, your actions, your behaviors. You and I honor those that have passed if we choose to. You and I show appreciation to those who have passed if we choose to. It is that honor, it is that appreciation that we should want to present. Look for a moment at Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 9, look at verse 39 for a second. Acts chapter 39, and think about Dorcas. And Peter rose and went with them. And when he arrived, they took him to the upper room, and all the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing tunics and other garments that Dorcas had made while she was with them. What were they doing? They were honoring her talents. They were honoring what she had presented, what she had given. They were honoring the servant by showing what she had done. When I am grieving, when I am going through the loss, I need to honor what I have lost. And finally, I want to present to you that a fourth thing is that you carry on traditions in their memory. You carry on about life. The most difficult time after losing someone because they have passed away is that first year. Within that first year, you have all of the anniversaries. And with all of the anniversaries, you have the same question that pops up in your head. You know what that question is? Do we really continue to do this if they're not here? The answer often when I'm given that question that I give is yes. Yes. You honor their memory. You continue on through life. You make sure the next person that walks up knows about who that is. You show that appreciation. You show that honor. You show that, look, this is he or she is a part of our life, though they may not be sitting here any longer. They are a part of who we are. And we should carry on those memories and carry on those traditions. Live in a way that honors that lost one. Live in such a way that makes sure everyone knows who they are. I'm reminded of the story of Esther. The story of Esther was required reading during the Feast of Purim. It was required that when they went through that feast, that they read this book. It was a tradition. Ultimately, it became a law. It was such a tradition. There are things that we should continue to do in order to show appreciation, to show love, to show that memory. As I mentioned last night, I talked about Eric, my brother. And my brother died in 1987 due to leukemia. And a few years ago, Newton County, which is the county there around Neosho, began doing what is called Relay for Life, American Cancer Society. Most of you probably were well aware of that. I'll get it out in a minute. And in that particular thing, my mom created a team simply called Eric Survivors. And that team has been operating every year that they have had American Cancer Society Relay for Life in Newton County. Well, my mom has really, really gotten gung-ho with this particular event. And we now have a big tent and we have a big sign that has a big picture of Eric and has whole plastered name, Eric Survivors. We have cool little red shirts. It's cool. Has Eric Survivor on the front of it. Remember last night we talked about the statement written on his gravestone on the back of the shirt says Forever 7. And we have all these things. And for my family, every year, second week in June, that's what we do. We relay. And we spend all year getting as much money as we can and ultimately give to Relay. Well, right before I went and left and went to Massachusetts, we did something new this year. We did a disc golf charity tournament. I got started in disc golf in August. I said, I got to get a tournament together. Sure enough, we did. On the 9th of April, we had our first tournament. We had 55 people come to that tournament and participate. On that particular day, $1,400 was raised. It was a huge event. Weather was wonderful. It was great. It was just really cool. Well, on that particular day, one of the guys that I have as my intern, he brought his two boys. And he had brought his boys, and he didn't play much disc golf, but he came and he brought his discs, and he walked around and he played. And I talked with him on Tuesday, and I said, what'd you think of the tournament? He says, man, it was really, really cool. He said, it was neat. He said, but my boys kept asking me questions. Yeah, you know, what's the rules or disc golf? No. He says, they kept asking me questions of who's that? Who's Eric? Why do they do this? Who is this person? The intern, he said, well, he says, this is the way they deal with losing their loved one. They remember him. They do things in honor of him. And they make sure that no one forgets him. My friends, if you are suffering through a loss and you are dealing with the grieving process, allow me to encourage you with a number of words. Number one, you've got to allow yourself to grieve. I don't care if this person passed a week ago, 6 weeks, 6 years, 600 years. I don't care how long it has been. If you have suffered loss and you haven't grieved, it's time. It's time to allow yourself to feel. To allow yourself to work through that pain so that you can walk through life to honor who they are. Honor what they mean to you. And show to everyone around you that they impact this world still. Do you remember the words of the Hebrew writer in mentioning Abel? There's not a single solitary word spoken by Abel written in Scripture. You will find no quotes. You will find no Abel said. You will find nothing in Scripture that indicates a single solitary word written by Abel. But you will find this inscription found in the book of Hebrews chapter 11. Though he be dead, yet he still speaks. When you and I suffer loss, let's keep that memory alive. Let's process through that loss. Let us move through life honoring, respecting, paying homage instead of running from our feelings. Again, as I close, allow me to express to you my deepest heartfelt appreciation for your attention, for your words of encouragement, and for your willingness to perhaps hear something new, intended to help us to be better Christians, realizing that though we are Christians, we still hurt. Though we are Christians, we still struggle. But because we are Christians, we can fight. And we can be victorious. Let us be encouraged tonight that there are answers to the problems of life. Jesus has not left us destitute. God has not left us without answers. God has left us with hope. He has left us with encouragement. He's left us with answers. And it is up to us whether or not we use them in our life to be children of God. Tonight, no matter what your need might be, whether it be prayers, whether it be help, whether it be a shoulder to cry on, whether it be an ear to listen, we're open. Come. As together as we stand and sing.